Russia's navy is dealt a blow as a flagship vessel sinks in the Black Sea. Plus, fresh violence rocks Jerusalem ahead of overlapping religious holidays, and COVID lockdowns spread to dozens of cities in China as authorities struggle to contain new infections.
If the situation in Shanghai doesn't get resolved soon, I think it's very easy for fear and frustration to be contagious and spread across the country.
It's Friday, April 15th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The Russian warship Moskva has sunk after suffering damage from a fire following what the Ukrainian military says was a cruise missile strike targeting the vessel. Russia said the source of the fire was unknown but had set off explosions of ammunition on board. A statement by the Russian Defense Ministry, reported by state agencies, said the ship sank in stormy weather due to structural damage as it was being towed to port. The Moskva was the flagship of Russia's Black Sea Fleet, and its loss represents a significant blow to Russia's military and compromises security of the entire fleet. The claimed strike on the Moskva came as Russian and Ukrainian forces exchanged artillery fire in the country's east after Moscow's attempt to take the capital, Kyiv, failed. Meanwhile, the head of the UN's World Food Program, David Beasley, has told the Associated Press that the agency has been unable to reach the besieged Ukrainian city of Mariupol, where he said people are being, quote, starved to death.
We believe that we can help the people in Ukraine if we are given the access we need, but I don't see any of that easing up. I just don't see it happening right now. In fact, it's getting worse and worse, concentrated in certain areas, and the front lines are going to be moving.
Clashes have erupted between Israeli security forces and Palestinians around the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem, leaving dozens injured. WSJ reporter Dov Lieber says the violence comes amid mounting tensions around overlapping religious holidays for Jews and Muslims in the city.
We saw Israeli riot dispersal measures such as stun grenades being shot into the mosque. These kinds of clashes in Jerusalem have the ability to spark wider escalations between Israelis and Palestinians and between Israel and also other countries in the region who look at any kind of Israeli incursion into the Al-Aqsa Mosque as an extreme provocation against Muslims, especially during the holy month of Ramadan.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott and the governor of the Mexican state of Chihuahua, Maria Campos Galvan, have announced that three more international bridges will see relief from state trucking inspections that have disrupted trade with Mexico. Abbott said they had reached an agreement for Chihuahua to do safety checks on trucks in Mexico.
We discussed border security at length. Governor Campos has provided me with the best border security plan that I've seen from any governor from Mexico.
The move should allow traffic to flow smoothly again over bridges that border the Mexican state, where long delays and ensuing protests by Mexican truckers led to hours-long waits and temporary closure of the bridges. And President Biden will nominate former Treasury Department official Michael Barr to serve as the Federal Reserve's top banking regulator, the White House says. If confirmed, Barr would serve as the Fed's vice chairman for supervision, charged with overseeing the largest U.S. financial firms. Biden's first pick for the job, Sarah Bloom Raskin, withdrew from consideration after Democratic Senator Joe Manchin said he couldn't support her nomination, citing her views on addressing climate change. When small business owners start out, many decide to lease equipment. But a clause in those equipment leasing contracts, known as a hell or high water clause, is now tormenting a number of entrepreneurs, binding them to make years of monthly payments no matter what. WSJ reporter Ruth Simon covers small businesses and entrepreneurship for us, and she joins us now with more. Hey, Ruth.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
So how do these hell or high water clauses work exactly, and what does it mean for the small business owners who have to deal with them?
Well, I think what happens is people don't really understand. They get this contract. It's got a lot of language in it. Often much of it is in very small print. But basically what it says is, like, you owe this money no matter what. You have unconditionally agreed to make your payments for the life of the lease. You're accepting the equipment as is. The companies that are providing the financing, the leasing and equipment financing companies, they're saying, we're just providing the money for this transaction. If the equipment is faulty, that's not our fault. We've outlined all these terms in the contract.
Could you maybe just walk us through an example of a business owner who's had to deal with one of these clauses?
I talked to a woman who, with her husband, was planning to open up a restaurant. They couldn't move forward because of the pandemic. They canceled the order for their equipment. Only one item had shipped. But the leasing company said they still owed nearly $70,000. And what the business owner said to me was, with the other debts we had, we would have probably been able to restructure. Instead, they had to file for bankruptcy. Now, this is a pretty extreme case, but it shows that we're not talking pennies. And particularly in the pandemic, the stress that can be put on business owners was especially large.
Ruth, what do lease companies say about all this? How do they justify the inclusion of this clause? And are any of them doing something to help borrowers?
The leasing companies that I spoke with said they tried to work with their customers during the pandemic to mostly give them deferrals on their lease payments. Typically, that was for 3 months. But what they say is, these are contracts. It's all spelled out here. Many of these things have been upheld in the courts, and they say they need to do this to make these transactions viable because they're taking on risk.
And do small business owners have any recourse here if they find themselves in trouble in their leases, or is this causing people to sort of crash out of entrepreneurship, possibly?
I think it's very tough for small business owners. It could be a factor that exacerbates the financial stresses that they're feeling. At the least, it leaves them pinched. They don't have a whole lot of remedies. I spoke to one business owner who filed a lawsuit in small claims court against the equipment vendor and used that money to pay off the lease. But she also had to dig into her company funds to pay off the balance.
That was WSJ reporter Ruth Simon, who covers small businesses and entrepreneurship for us. Ruth, thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, China is now expanding COVID-19 lockdowns to dozens of cities as it contends with its worst outbreak since the start of the pandemic and the risk of cascading economic consequences if it can't bring the virus to heel. We'll have that story after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Localized COVID-19 lockdowns are spreading across China, now covering 45 Chinese cities, home to a combined 373 million people. And if those lockdowns play out like they have in recent weeks in the city of Shanghai, China could face a major challenge as it tries to contain a virus and limit damage to the world's second largest economy. Joining us to discuss the situation in China is WSJ reporter Stella Yifan Xie. She covers China for us. Stella, thank you for being with us and welcome.
Thank you so much.
So Stella, given everything we are seeing now, is China's zero COVID strategy faltering?
Yeah, from the conversations, you know, I've had with residents in Shanghai, this is apparently what a lot of people's mind, they start to question as the pandemic stretches on about the wisdom of the zero COVID strategy. Some people point to the fact that case number continues to rise, even though Shanghai has been under lockdown for more than 2 weeks. A lot of people are very upset and they're grieving about the psychological and economic toll this has taken on the public. But however, on the same time, we don't see any sign that Beijing is gonna back off from the zero COVID policy. And that means, you know, on the ground, all these rules are really inflexible. And apparently for Shanghai, you know, which is the wealthiest city in China, the city took a big hit economically. We are seeing inflation of food prices pretty rampant within the city, in large part because of the shortage of supply. I think for on the ground, the economic cost is building up for sure. And by one estimate, 87 out of 100 largest cities in China are subject to some kind of COVID-related restrictions. And that really has a big toll on the economy overall.
What's the public sentiment in reaction to all of this? You talk about discontent in Shanghai, but what about elsewhere in China?
So in Shanghai, for sure, people are getting more frustrated and angry with where things are heading towards. They're venting online or seeking help from other people after they kind of fail to receive help from the government. As we reported, you know, it continues to be a struggle for many people in the city to secure food and other necessities. Medical care for non-COVID illness remains very limited. I think beyond Shanghai, people elsewhere are watching how the crisis unfolds in Shanghai very closely. But I think if the situation in Shanghai doesn't get resolved soon, I think it's very easy for fear and frustration to be contagious and spread across the country.
So what should we be watching for next in China as we try to monitor this effort to both contain the virus and contain any economic damage as well?
I think we need to definitely watch whether more people in Shanghai are sort of reaching their breaking point if the lockdown extends for a much longer period of time. We definitely need to monitor very closely the cascading economic effects, such as falling property sales, home price, and weak consumer spending. A big concern at the moment is the logistics and supply chain problems. So many factories in Shanghai so far, they've managed to continue produce because workers are required to live there. But as the lockdown remains in place, a big risk is that truck drivers are having a really hard time bringing raw materials from outside of the city. And that could potentially force many factories to halt production soon, which will probably have a big impact on the global supply chains. And there's another fear. So outside of Shanghai, there's another massive COVID outbreaks in Jilin, which is a northern province that is one of China's most crucial agriculture base. People are worried that the outbreaks there and the COVID restriction rules may delay the spring planting in the region. And that triggered a lot of anxiety, especially as the Ukraine war already made China even more worried about food security issue.
And of course, we need to watch the health response as well, right? If these lockdowns aren't effective, that would be a hit to this approach that China has taken to the virus, no?
I think we will have to see what kind of measure China will take to exit the current COVID strategy. The crucial question is whether China will ramp up efforts to inoculate more population. The current vaccination rate among China's elderly population remains very low compared to other large economies. And that's a big reason why China has been very reluctant to ease restrictions. But so far, Shanghai has appeared to be more focused on conducting mass detection and isolating infected individuals rather than boosting its vaccination rate. The city said earlier that it would support imports of foreign vaccinations, but we just don't know yet what that will mean and whether this will materialize in any way.
That was WSJ reporter Stella Yifan Xie, who covers China for us. Stella, thank you so much for the update.
Oh, thank you so much.
And finally, the seemingly innocent act of hanging up a bird feeder in your garden could cause more harm than you think. Bird feeders have been linked to disease harmful for both birds and humans, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. WSJ Consumer Trends reporter Rachel Wolf says the jury is still out among scientists whether these feeders ultimately cause more harm than good, but they do agree there is a right and wrong way to care for them.
Last year, feeders were linked to a salmonella outbreak that ended up killing thousands of finches and sickened people. So you're going to just want to make sure that you're cleaning them. You're moving them around the yard every so often, and that you're looking for feeders that are sealed to the elements and that have pretty small openings so that birds aren't sticking their entire heads inside and spreading eye infections and other diseases to one another.
And that's What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.